Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I just love the wonderful musical sounds of the holiday season. Happy holidays to you. This is LSEC Publishing Radio, and I am your host, Teresa Banks. If you'd like to dial into the program and maybe get away from that laptop or that desktop or to ask questions, you are welcome to do so by calling 626-213-5738. Now, my guest today is actually a gentleman I have been waiting several weeks anxiously to talk to. His name is Kenneth Marshall, and he's the author of a book entitled Hopscotch on Bloodstained Sidewalks. He also has an associate's and a bachelor's degree in sociology. He lives in Indiana, and he does all he can to serve the Chicagoland communities through the social services field. Kenneth, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I am so glad you could be here today. I am holding your book in my hand, and I first want to start off by saying to you that this cover is truly powerful, and as you always hear people say, it's the cover that really entices someone to buy the book. So how did you come up with this title and this cover design?
Well, that was my intention, to get something that was eye-catching, as you said, but not for book sales per se, but to just catch people's attention and say we got to do something about the violence and the madness that's going on.
And, you know, just the irony in looking at the cover, it's almost a weird contrast of watching the young people try to play hopscotch with the blood there on the sidewalk. Do you think it's almost as if we're just ignoring what's going on, the crime that's happening?
Yes, the key word I like to use is desensitization. Desensitization. People just so used to things that it comes to the point where they don't even notice it. So that's the message I wanted to send with the title as well as the image you see.
Well, I think you certainly do, because, I mean, if I think of hopscotch in those days of playing on the sidewalk, you know, I can't even picture, you know, seeing such danger along with it of what kind of crime could have happened that left that there, the blood there. And I know in reading your book in the foreword, someone named Diana Stanley said that situations we see today are our failure to respond as a human family. And do you think that that's true as well?
Yes, I take it on a personal level. It's our fault as black people specifically, and black men specifically, to stand up and take control back over our communities, because a lot of us are allowing things to occur when all we have to do is say something. I mean, if you have the no snitch rule, which is something I talked about in the book, and that's become commonplace when all it takes is somebody to actually make a stand as a collective. I know individually it doesn't work, but maybe as a collective it might make a difference.
And I remember reading the story in your book that talks about that, but at the same time, isn't that whole thing about retaliation real? Isn't that why people aren't doing it?
Yes, it is real, but I guess sometimes, I hate to say it like this, but sacrifices have to be made, because the other side of the coin is not saying anything, is allowing more control from that faction, from that particular side, to continue to grow
and
take over our communities even more.
That's true. That is true. And do you think it depends on, do you think it depends on the block that you're on? Like if you have this sense that you are already on a supportive block, you should say something, or do you feel you should just always say something, and if you're retaliated against, that's just the consequence to it?
Yeah, it's sad to say. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that is what needs to be done. I mean, regardless of what block it is, because it could be your block. I mean, look at it like that. Like I talked about it, the extended family was something we used to do as a community years ago. Some children don't even remember it, but whether the parent on the next block knew the child on the block they was on and still was able to say something to them and then contact their parent, by the time they got home, they had to get it again because they had a phone call, you know? That was checks and balances.
Yes, yes. You are so right about that. Sometimes you, as they say, you get your butt kicked all the way home and then have to deal with it again. But do you think today we don't do that because we're selfish or because we have too much going on? Is it fear? I mean, what do you think is the reason that so much of that has dissolved?
Yeah, I think it's the lack of positive images that the families are having. I mean, the young people, I put it like that, the young men that are growing up, and they have a lack of positive images on a continuous basis. I mean, they can see the basketball players and the entertainers, you know, things of that nature, but right in their community, they're not seeing it enough. And then, of course, the lack of the father figures and the single mothers trying their best to do a dual role as mother and father, and you know, obviously it's not enough.
Yeah, yeah, those are all really good points because, I mean, if they don't have that support and if they are not seeing the positive things that they should be doing, I mean, how can we really expect them to turn out in a particular way? And that kind of leads me toward one question I really want to ask you is, you know, if we ourselves are not fully developed, you know, if we're on drugs, if we are, you know, impoverished, where we have no job, we're caught up with what's going on today, we're in the midst of the mortgage crisis, you know, if we're a teenage parent, you know, if we have all these flaws, how can we help our young people? You know, what can we do?
That's a very good question. I tried to address that in one of my stories called But She Was Only a Child. I talk about, you know, you got children raising children, and then people standing off to the side saying, what's wrong with that person? Why aren't they doing a good job? I mean, that's the problem, the children having children. So it starts with the parent. Like, I'm a parent of three daughters, so it's my job, my duty, to ensure that they know that promiscuous sex and stuff of that nature leads to, you know, pregnancy and unwanted pregnancy and distraction from continuing education. And so that's why I say it starts with the parent. And so you have a lack of that now, so therefore you have the results.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sad because, I mean, you have so many kids where, you know, they do have a drugged out mom or dad, and unfortunately I'm hearing more of the mom being, you know, really messed up. We pick on the dad so much, but I'm hearing of a lot of the issues with the mom. So what is the kid to do? You know, I mean, we don't want to wait till they're in foster care. Do you think maybe kids nowadays have to take on more themselves to find their own positive role models or stay in school later? Or do more adults need to step up? I mean, what's the answer here?
Yeah, I wouldn't put that much pressure on a child because I wouldn't want nobody, when I was a child, a child should not take that much pressure. It's up to the adults. I mean, we have to appeal to enough people's inner soul to create some kind of movement or some kind of, I don't know the word I want, but some kind of movement going where we understand that it's going to take us to save us. I mean, it's been said so many times, it's almost a cliche now, but it's reality, it's realistic, that's what needs to be done. I mean, back in the late 60s, the Black Panther Party, whatever controversies they might have encountered, but they came together as a movement and said, this is what we're trying to do, and it worked for a while. I mean, we were together, not completely, but enough to make a difference, you know.
Yes, yes. And what's scary today is, as you said, we're not seeing that, you know. We're just seeing the kids kind of run a, you know, astray. And so that's why I keep constantly, you know, asking myself, constantly asking other people, what is it going to take? Like, you're saying a movement, but are there some specifics that you've kind of thought about where you think maybe we can get a handle on stopping this violence? Is there anything we can specifically do?
Well, like I said, one of my answers is, well, the parents that are in the households, and I mean, there's a lot of good families out there. It might not seem like it, you look at the news or something, but parents begin to do better with being involved in their children's lives. I mean, when they leave in the house, where are you going? I like to know whose house you're going to. And instilling morals and values, not to say that nobody's doing that, but maybe we need to do it on a higher level, telling the children what and what not to do and where and where not to go and things like that, just being more involved. I think that's something specific that needs to be done. On the other hand, we also need, like I said before, the black men to begin to engage with the young people. I mean, I ride down the street and I see three or four, maybe more, just standing on a corner. And I wonder to myself, okay, what prompts them just to want to just stand there? I mean, I know people are, you know, participating in illegal activities or whatever the reason is, but we need to come up to them and just, okay, you know, you're standing here. You could be using this energy. I talk about that in the book, by the way. I call it unrealized potential or potential unrealized. Mm-hmm. You know, just all that energy and all that dedication to stand there. Let's take that energy and open up a daycare. I mean, not a daycare center, but an after-school program. And you can be sitting there tutoring or something like that or whatever the case may be, or playing basketball, doing something with the children, keeping them from just going home and playing a video game to stay off the streets.
And Kenneth, I have to say, I love your comparison in your book, Hopscotch on Bloodstained Sidewalks, where you talk about, I even made a note here, you talk about the young people being on the corner and just thinking about the skills that they're using. You were talking about punctuality, their determination to be there, their resilience. And you were saying that, you know, in comparison to a Fortune 500 company and how they could use that, how much different they could use that. And I just love that analogy. I thought you did such a great job with that.
Well,
oh, my
you.
Goodness. Now, with our boys, because you talk a lot about our boys and our young men in your book, and one thing that kind of bugs me and that I really don't understand is that our girls go through a lot, too. We go through pregnancies. Sometimes we may be raped. We go through a lot that we have to deal with, verbal abuse, physical abuse. Yet, for some reason, our boys have a much harder time trying to make it, at least it seems that way to me, in our society, where they may wind up with the drugs, with the guns. Do you think there's a reason why that is?
Yes, because it goes back to what we just talked about earlier. The cause of the violence and stuff like that, it seems like it's by design. I mean, I don't want to get into a conspiracy theory or nothing like that, but it seems kind of coincidental that we could talk about the disparity in the incarceration rate and things of that nature, the black men being snatched off the street, and the women left alone to raise the child at the best of their ability. And then you have, like you said, the young men with no father figures, the ones that's growing up while their father's away or maybe even dead. And you have the young men trying to grow up and raise themselves.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because, you know, I mean, the girls, sometimes they're in the same boat. And as you said, with the single moms, they're kind of struggling to do the best that they can. And I know that you do a whole lot to help the community. Do you think people like yourself, you know, those that are trying to put together these after-school programs to help children, should they feel almost ashamed when you are so involved in the community but you're not seeing the results?
No, that's it, too. That's something I talked about. That's one underlying theme you see in my stories is talking about the, how do I word it, the attention being put on an incident, and then 3 days later we catch amnesia as a community.
Yeah.
And we seem to just move on to the next incident. In the meantime, that last incident is history. We need to focus more on the entire root of the problem, which we kind of touched on a few minutes ago, the lack of respect, lack of father figures, and to try to deal with that as opposed to a prayer vigil and a shrine because somebody got killed. Let's try to deal with what's causing it, so therefore we can stop it. Therefore, we have to have no more of these so-called ceremonies that I've talked about.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. And I respect the people that take the time out to, you know, show their respects for, you know, the fallen and people that have been hurt in the community. But at the same time, I'm almost to the point where I'm tired of the talk. You know, I want to see, what are people doing? You know, how are you volunteering your time? And you had mentioned something interesting earlier that you think it takes the sacrifice. I mean, do you think that's what it's going to keep taking, that we keep seeing the killing of our young people before, you know, we're seeing 200 and 300, you know, hundreds each year die before there's this big movement you talked about? Is that what it's going to take?
That's what I'm asking in the book. What is it going to take? Because, I mean, how much worse can it get? Not saying that we're like a war zone, but it's close to it. I mean, they can compare the statistics of the amount of soldiers being killed during wartime as opposed to the amount of black children being killed in the United States of America.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I said, what is it going to take?
Right. I mean, we've seen, you know, people hurt on the street all the time. And before the show, you and I were talking about the incident of the teen that was killed in front of a high school, you know, with planks of wood. You know, I mean, how drastic does it have to get? You know, I don't understand. And at the same time, you also said there are a lot of people that are doing good. And so do you think we need to hear more of the good then?
Yes, and that's what I talk about in the media, not playing that too much. You're hearing about the negative is more than the positive, and that makes people just despondent, which is what I talk about a lot, you know. So that's why I tried to have some, I know it might seem a lot of my stories had sad endings or something, but I was just trying to be realistic and say, look what's going on, we got to do something.
Yes, and I think that to me it's better to portray it that way, you know, where you're giving the real image and you're telling people, here's the truth of what's going on, you know, because otherwise there's almost these rose-colored glasses that are constantly staying on and people aren't seeing it for what it is. And one thing that's really interesting, because we talked about the extended family and the way the extended family used to be, but one thing that's interesting is that if you are in a family and you're seeing certain things destroy those that are older than you, whether it be obesity, whether it be alcohol, eating wrong, drugs, gambling, whatever, why is it that you think that isn't triggering something in younger people that live in that family to want to change?
I agree. I have no idea, but I know that's a problem too. You're right. I know when I was young, we had a thing then, I keep going back to the past, forgive me for that, but people who did smoke or did drink, for some reason, they would tell you, okay, you see me doing this, but I don't want you doing this when you grow up because it's not right. That's not happening now.
That's not happening now.
I don't know where the disconnect happened, but it's not happening now. Well, we know part of the reason, but we can't put the blame on one area, but a lot of it is we always talk about the upsurge of the drugs in the early 80s seems to have did a lot of damage to the black families as well, as far as the crack and things of that nature, when the men started getting incarcerated on a higher rate or becoming drug addicts on a higher rate. And, I mean, some kind of disconnect happened where people had no concern anymore for the younger generation. and the young generation began to raise themselves, and that's what, this is the product of it right now, 2010.
So do you think it's just selfishness then? Or, because I know, you know, they've reached a point where, you know, obviously black people have more freedoms and liberties to do things, and it almost became where you had to be more independent, you know, like, you know, run your own life, do your own thing. There's no going across the street to the neighbors for sugar type of deal. And I don't excuse you at all for going back to the past, because I love it when you do it, because people need to know there was a huge difference, especially in the black community, as you and I more than likely, as during the years we were growing up, of the togetherness. But I just wonder if it's because there's been this shift. You know, people are making more money, they're more independent. I mean, is it that, or are people just selfish? You know, and they're like, good luck. I made it. You know, I handled my life. Good luck with yours.
Yeah, I don't know. We can't say people making more money, though, because then you talk about the people that's actually impoverished. So
yeah.
It's just some kind of consciousness shift, as you talk about, a shift in the mentality of being concerned about each other that happened. I'm going to tell you a little story. I was over with one of my residents, and I took her to home visits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm visiting, and she's telling me that she has a situation with her lights getting ready to cut off. She had a disconnect notice.
Mm.
And so that's part of the services I provide, is no resources, no letting people know where to get assistance for different issues and stuff. And so, but I looked over on the mantle, and I saw a brand-new 42-inch, what they call it, high-definition flat-screen TV. And I said, oh, that's a nice TV. And she said, oh, yeah, I got that for Black Friday. I said, wow, that's a nice TV. But in my mind, I'm saying, okay, you saying your light screen get cut off, but you were able to go down and get a television.
Mm.
I'm not trying to change the subject, but I'm talking about the choices and the mind state, the mentality.
Mm.
Rather than she had children, so you were so, like you said, selfish, so concerned about having a television in your home that you were willing to sacrifice or just relinquish any kind of values you had about providing unnecessary things for your household for a big television, you know. That really stuck in my mind.
That was such a great story. I'm glad you mentioned that, because as we hear of more and more people, especially those losing their jobs, that's one of the things they talk about, that social element of, you know, being able to show friends and family they're still doing well. And unfortunately, we still equate wealth and doing good with things, with buying stuff. Yes, being materialistic, having a certain shoe or jacket on or whatever. And as you said, that, you know, the kids are watching that, you know.
Yeah.
They're watching it all. Now, one other thing I want to ask you before we start wrapping things up and getting more into how we can get a hold of your book is, you know, if you're working with young people and they're talking about, you know, their life, you know, and their struggles, do you ever hear or get an understanding of why there's this disrespect for life to the point where some people will hurt you or kill you to try and take something that you have? I mean, do you ever hear any reasoning behind that?
No, I haven't, and I've been waiting to hear it. Believe me, that's one of the things I want to know so bad. Where did it happen? Well, it came, where it came to the point from when we used to fist fight, and now it's gotten to the point where you want to take a person's life and make it so final. It blows my mind. It blows my mind. I'm waiting to get that answer. And I talk to the young people, I am trying to get that answer. I mean, they don't even know, I don't think, because it's something they see the older ones doing. I guess, I don't know where it's coming from, but in our time, it was a fight. You might have had a black eye. You might have lost a tooth. But you were able to wake up the next morning and shake hands with that same person that you fought with.
Absolutely.
But now it's to the point of finality. I got to obliterate you so that I don't see you no more. And I ain't got to worry about you coming after me, I guess. Maybe that's the reason, but to the point was just finality. That's the word I use. Just decimate the person or the problem or whatever caused it, and then walk around the next day, and I guess that's a badge of honor. Okay, I killed somebody. I pulled a gun.
Well, man, it is just the weirdest thing, but the key thing is I am just so proud of you and all that you're doing. And I know you were telling me earlier the area that you work in and the community that you serve. It is truly a blessing to have not only a person like you, but a man like you in the area, you know, and really making a difference. And I really love your book. I really highly recommend that everyone pick up a copy of this book. So why don't you share with the listening audience here how they can buy a copy of your book, how they can contact you and get more information.
Okay. First of all, I'd say one last comment, though. You know, there are a lot of people that are like me out there. Unfortunately, we're not putting our heads together and, like, are you talking about creating some kind of movement or something? I know I keep using that vague word, but we have to do something as opposed to just having a meeting and talk about what we need to do. We need to do something because they're out there. We won't know it watching the news and the two-second sound bites, as I like to refer to, where you see somebody shot or they're after somebody that shot somebody, and that's all you think that our community consists of. But to locate the book, you have www.amazon.com, www.barnesandnoble.com, or www.zeniumpublications.com.
And would you mind spelling that Zenium just so people know how that's spelled too?
Oh,
please.
Yes. I'm sorry. Okay, Zenium, as Z as in zebra, E-N-I-A-M as in Michael, .com. Publications.com, I'm sorry. And I can be contacted at my email address, which is kmarshall_44@yahoo.com.
Well, Kenneth, I tell you, it has been a joy to speak with you today, and I will certainly, tell people about your book and to pick up copies. It is a wonderful read, and more importantly, it's an urgent read for people to really understand what young people are facing, what adults are facing, and I can't say enough, you know, that it's just looking at the cover alone, people need to get this book. So thank you so much for being on the program. If at any time you want to come on back and talk, please feel free to contact me. You are always welcome to do so.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you are very welcome. And if you'd like, you can stay on the line and listen to the rest of the show as I wrap things up. But you take very good care of yourself and enjoy this wonderful holiday season.
And you too. Happy holidays.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you again later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, to all of my listeners that are there, both online as well as on the telephone, we have just been treated to an outstanding conversation from Kenneth Marshall. And again, his book is called Hopscotch on Bloodstained Sidewalks. I have a copy. It's currently here in my hand as I speak to you. And the cover is wonderful, but I tell you, the read is magnificent. And you need to get a copy of this book, I would say, not just for yourself, but also definitely get a copy for friends, for family. Make it a gift. Christmas is coming up, and perhaps any other holiday season that you're celebrating where you need to fill some stockings and take care of gifts. You may have birthdays or whatever. Make sure that you get a copy of Hopscotch on Bloodstained Sidewalks by Kenneth Marshall. And I want to just remind you all to please become a friend of the show. You can go over to blogtalkradio.com/Elasec. Elasec is spelled E-L-L-A-C-E-C. And become a friend so you can find out who will be up next. And you certainly want to go and check out those archives under episodes on demand, so that you can hear who some of the past guests have been as well. It has been a pleasure talking with all of you today, and I thank you again so much for listening. It has just been tremendous to see so many different people that have given constant feedback on the show, and I've been on just a little bit over a month at this point, and I've been averaging probably about 800 to close to 1,000 listeners, and I appreciate everyone who's doing so. Please definitely spread the word about this show, and I'm going to certainly keep doing that as well. I want to wish everyone happy holidays. If you'd like to reach me, drop me an email at mailtobanks@aol.com. It's spelled M-A-I-L, the number 2, B as in boy, A-N-K-S, @aol.com. Until we speak, take good care of yourself. Be on the lookout for our young people. And as Kenneth said, get involved. Find out something that you can do to help them out and guide them and help steer them on the way. Take care, all. I look forward to hearing from you and talking to you again real soon. God bless.